comes to us from the Universidad del Norte in Colombia, where he holds a visiting DAD professorship at the Institute for European Studies. He studied spatial planning in Dortmund and in Rome and completed his doctorate in social sciences at the Humboldt University in Berlin. He's also been coordinator of the spatial planning program at Erfurt University of Applied Sciences, and his main research areas include multi-level governance, urban and regional studies, EU-Latin American relations, and local economic development. I should say that this talk today is part of your lecture series in Suburbs Talks, and thanks also to Sirlac for being a co-sponsor. And the title of Florian's talk today is Urban Planning and Governance Processes at the City Fringe, the case of Barranquilla, Colombia.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you for the three centers to invite me. I'm going to present some first results of a research which I'm doing currently now at Universidad del Norte in Barranquilla, which has to do with new urban developments in Barranquilla, Colombia. The content of my presentation, I will first speak a little bit about the context, about the city of Barranquilla, the history, the geographical context, and also the political context. Then I will focus on the new developments which happened since the 1990s, and then I will analyze the politics and policy of suburban urban governance in Barranquilla. As a conclusion, I'm focusing on the actors and on the forms of suburban governance in Barranquilla, and also I'm trying to figure out what role does Barranquilla play in a broader form of Latin American suburbanization. What are the specific factors of suburbanization in Barranquilla, and what are more broad Latin American factors? Barranquilla is located in the northern part of Colombia at the Atlantic coast. It's a city with 1.2 million inhabitants. The whole metro region has 2.5 million inhabitants. It's the fourth biggest city in Colombia. It's also the capital of the department, Atlántico. Department is the subnational level in Colombia. The geography of Colombia makes Barranquilla, or the coast, the Caribbean coast of Colombia, a little bit isolated because there are the Andean mountains, and the transportation system makes it difficult to communicate with the other three big cities, which are Medellin, Cali, and Bogota, which are quite far away. Barranquilla, which has nothing to do now with urban development, but is also the home of Shakira and Sofia Vergara, which is important for the pride of the people from Barranquilla, and is important to mention. The city itself is located not only on the coastline, on the Atlantic coast, but also at the river Rio Magdalena, which is the biggest river in Colombia, which connects the Atlantic coast to the inner part of the city. It also, the geographical circumstances of Barranquilla make it difficult for urban growth, urban development, because the river on this side, which is another department, which is mainly a national park, so urban growth is forbidden to large parts, forbidden there. Also, it's mainly swampland. So if Barranquilla wants to grow, it basically has to be on this side of the river, where there are also some swamp areas, and which makes urban growth a little bit difficult. Saying something about the history of Barranquilla. Barranquilla was a settlement of an indigenous group of the Camachos, and it was no town foundation by the Spanish, which means that the city structure is not a colonial city structure like in other Latin American cities, but it was another form of urban development without these clear grid structures. It was we're speaking now about the 18th century, it was of minor strategic importance. It was basically a place of commerce between Cartagena and Santa Marta, which were both quite important colonial Spanish towns. So Barranquilla the urban development in Barranquilla was quite slow during these times, and there was also no permanent Spanish presence in Barranquilla. This all changed in the second half of the 19th century because the river Rio Magdalena was made navigable. This means that it was possible to transport goods from the inner part of the city to other parts of the world, and also for importation it was important. And there was a port founded, there were railroads built, and the development of Barranquilla became more dynamic. There were, it was just also intensification of commerce and with the interior of the country. It was an accelerated urban development, the population increased, it was also internationalization of the population, modern infrastructure, and the introduction of new companies took place during this time. Also, a little bit later, at the beginning of the 20th century, there was a first phase of private-led suburbanization, which went from the inner city, from the city core, to the northern part of the city, and which was made by a developing company who sold plots to people who could build their houses. During the 1940s to the beginning of the 1990s, Barranquilla faced a difficult situation. There was a decline in the city's economy. The reasons for that were interplay of different factors. The Panama Canal, which was opened already earlier, but had, of course, an impact on the port of Barranquilla because other connections to the Pacific coast, to the harbor of Buenaventura, which was the Colombian harbor on the Pacific coast, the city gained importance. There was also a change of the national economic policy, import substituting policy, which means that the aim was to focus more on producing in the country and less importation, which was important, of course, for a city like Barranquilla, who is mainly depending on commerce with other parts of the world. But also during this time, there were problems with maintaining the navigability of the river, which means that there were a lot of huge sands going to the river, and it was difficult that the ships could use the Rio Magdalena as a transport way. Also, during this time, there was the political crisis and the civil war. La violencia in Colombia started, and especially in Barranquilla, we can see an instability of local politics, corruption, clientelism. All this was basically in the second half of the 20th century, and led finally to municipal crisis and bankruptcy of the city in 1995. During this time, also the urban development was slowed down. There were projects taking place. There was a big stadium built, but it was not an integrated planning approach. It was flagship projects without connection to the urban fabric. During this time, despite of the economic crisis of Barranquilla, we can see a population growth, which was basically rural migration of poor households coming to the city. This is the population development of Barranquilla, and we can see that during the second part of the 20th century, the city grew from 300,000 to more than 1 million inhabitants. The patterns of this urban growth were basically informal settlements in the south, which was a result of the population growth and the difficult economic situation. I have to mention that this is still ongoing. 55 to 60% of the population live in poverty, 28 to 30% in extreme poverty, and more than 60% of the city are so-called informal construction. Barranquilla has one of the highest rate of poverty in Colombia, and there was only a marginal reduction of the poverty rate during the last years. The new theories of urban development in Latin America are often mentioned the city of islands, which means that there are rich neighborhoods in the sea of poor neighborhoods, that there's that rich neighborhoods are bordering poor neighborhoods. In Barranquilla, you can't see the city of islands. You can see a clear divide between a rich north part of the city and a poorer south part of the city. This map is based on the strato system. The strato system is a system which which exists in all Colombian cities and which divides the cost for water, electricity, that this depend on the quality of the infrastructure of and the built environment. This means that if you live in a poor neighborhood with bad infrastructure, you have to pay less for your water and for your electricity. One is the lowest standard of infrastructure and the lowest cost, while six is the highest standard. This strato system is very strongly related to the income of the households. So one can see, if you look at the system of strato, of the social levels in Barranquilla, that we have quite huge areas of lower social levels, which are basically in the south and the southwestern part of the city, while the higher social levels are more in the north, northeastern part of the city. Also, the proportion of the social levels show a little bit the situation in Barranquilla. There are more than almost 60% of the people live in the poor stratos, while only 10% live in the higher social levels, five and six. I'm now speaking about the new developments which took place in Barranquilla, and they are located here in the northern part, which means that it's just an amplification of the development pattern which took place during the whole urban development of Barranquilla. I have to say that this is only one part of the urban development. There are other problems, other important aspects of urban development in Barranquilla, mainly in the lower social levels, in the lower stratos, which have to do with the displaced people coming from rural areas to the city. I'm not going to focus on this. Just I want to emphasize that what I'm going now to present is only one small part of urban development in Barranquilla, which takes place. The new developments I'm going to speak about now are mainly gated communities and towers, as well as shopping centers, urban entertainment centers, hotels, private hospitals, which were appearing during the construction boom, which started in the middle of the 1990s, and which is still ongoing. All these developments are quite similar to other Latin American cities, where also these new elements of shopping centers, gated communities, gated towers are taking place. The location pattern in Barranquilla, like I said, there is the clear divide between the rich north and the poor south. The shopping centers are dispersed in the whole city, but the residential projects are mainly in the northern part of the city. And also important, they are all gated communities. There are security issues for all new developments which are going to take place there. Here I show some photos. What's going on? Basically, it's two kinds of new developments. It's the gated houses, gated communities, detached houses, and the gated towers. The built structure is quite dense. We're not speaking about suburban land. This is at the city fringe. This is close to the built area. Like I said, it's all fenced and gated. There are 24-hour security wards and video surveillance, everything. Also, the The projects are mainly car orientated, which is not a one, but well, which is basically like that in gated communities. But here we're speaking about the distance from this neighborhood to, let's say, shopping facilities, more infrastructure facilities. It's only 100 meters, but still it's almost impossible to walk because there's just no roads to where you can walk. So you depend completely on the car. So here the density of the gated towers, and here's the whole area. You can see the shopping center, Buena Vista, which was the starting point of the development, and you can see the gated towers and of course the gated communities. We made a short survey to ask people who lives there and why do you live there. And the people said us, well, it's basically security reason that always plays a role in this development, but it's not only this motivation. there are also other aspects. People say, okay, we want a new house, we want a new apartment, which is a reason for moving from an old apartment. We want a calm neighborhood. We also see this as an investment opportunity, which means that people buy their house because they expect that the price of the house will grow in the future. Also quite interesting is that people say, okay, this is a nice area which is close to everything. So they are not saying, well, I'm moving out to the suburbs, I'm moving out to the nature, but I'm moving to a new neighborhood which is close to everything. Close to everything means close to the shopping centers, close to the private education infrastructure. So this is one important thing. The people who move there are basically mixed family structures, not only young families. Well, it's basically pretty mixed. Important is also that half of the respondents don't want to live there more than 3 years, which sustains a little bit the view that it's an investment opportunity, and if they move out, they see that not as a place to be there for forever, but as a place where they live for some years, and then they will sell it with more expensive. Well, the former place of residence was in bordering neighborhoods near to the city. Once again, the idea is not moving to the suburbs, but moving to the new Barranquilla, moving to the new city structure. Okay. Well, the important thing, what I'm going to focus on the second part of my presentation is now what forms of governance produced these new city structures. How were the politics, how were the policy, and the polity of this kind of development. I'm using an analytical framework, which focusing on the three dimension. the polity, which is formal, institutional, and structural dimension, the rules of the game. So how is the state or the municipality organized? Politics is the process of making political decisions. Here I'm looking at the different actors, not only public actors, but of course also the private actors. And policy is the content dimension. What are the objectives of the political processes? In this case, well, I'm looking at the content of urban planning, of the urban plans which were made. I'm starting with the polity, the context of urban planning in Barranquilla. There were changes of the political and economical national and local context during the 1990s. One important change was that it was from this import substituting industrialization to a more neoliberal economic strategy, which can be seen in the growth of free trade agreements which Colombia has now with Canada, with the United States in some weeks. Also, there is some negotiation with the European Union. So the idea is to open the Colombian economy and to make these free trade agreements, which is of specific importance, of course, for a port city, for a city like Barranquilla, which depends so much on commerce with the exterior. During this time, well, there was an increasing importance of second-tier cities and especially trade centers. There were decentralization strategies from the national to the municipal level. The mayors are now directly elected, but the period, but there is a restriction about the election period, a period about 4 years. And for Barranquilla, we can see that there's a more stable local government. In the 30 years before 1990s, there were 19 mayors, mayor of Barranquilla, and now the mayor changes less frequently. Regarding the urban planning laws, also there we can see a restructuring. Since 1997, there exists a new urban planning law. There were these land use plans invented, POT, Plan de Ordenamiento Territorial, and these plans are now obligatory for Colombian municipalities. We have more formal participative elements for civil society actors. The regional metropolitan planning approaches are almost absent. There exist a metro region institution, but still the powers, especially in steering residential development, are not very, very big of these institutions, of these regional institutions. Of course, there is a connection between the construction boom and narcotráfico drug activities. There's just a lot of money in the city which has to be invested. So Barranquilla, the context of Barranquilla, there were new planning regulations with more formal power to form municipal governments, and there was also an intensified economic activity. There was more economic pressure on the development of the city. We're speaking now about the politics, about this, the development, the new developments, the new development projects which took place since the 1990s. The whole area where these places, where this development took place, which I showed you in the charts, was one landowner. The landowner was Cementos de Caribe, Argos, which is one of the big cement producers in Colombia, one of the biggest firms also in Colombia. They owned the land since the 1930s, and they planned it as an amplification area for their cement factory. I'm not an expert in cement. I think there were some prime materials which they wanted to use to use there for their cement factory. In the 1970s, all the area, Argos, a piece of this area, Argos donated to the Universidad del Norte, one of the biggest universities in Barranquilla. This university was the first university which located there in the area, but other universities followed, though a university corridor was constructed in the first phase of suburbanization, not residential suburbanization, but suburbanization of, well, higher education, basically private higher education institutions took place. During the 1990s, Argos made a master plan for the whole area and decided to urbanize the area, to sell the area and to make their new constructions. The master plan was for 1,200 hectares, basically, well, mixed uses with residential, commercial and services. Argos, a private company, made a cooperation with a public-private water company, AAA, and they were deciding, well, how to organize the water supply of this area. Argos also was the responsible urbanizer, urbanizadora, which means that they were developing the infrastructure, they were developing the roads, water pipelines, lighting, and parks, and selling then these plots to construction companies who constructed their these gated communities and the gated towers. So we can see the first phase of urbanization, which was until 2001, 2002. There we can see that the projects were realized basically without consideration of citywide urban planning issues. This means that, well, the new urban planning laws already existed, but there was no plan yet made by the city of Barranquilla. So what happens was that these big projects, the shopping mall, residential project, were built on normative reasons. So it's said, okay, if it doesn't hurt anybody, we can build it, but without regarding the whole city environment. The companies who were involved there were only a few companies involved in this. There was, of course, Aros, the landowner. There was IAS Construction, which was the developer of the shopping center, Pla Construction, and Marval, which is the biggest construction company in Barranquilla. Important to mention is that all these enterprises, not Marval, but the other ones, are local enterprises, which are strongly related to local politics. The brother of the president of IS Construction is the governor of the Departamento Atlantico. Char Construction is owned by the former mayor of Barranquilla, so you have this very, very close connection between political actors and private companies. Public steering approaches during this first phase of urbanization didn't play a major role. The second phase of urbanization was then transforming Aros master plans into a public land use plan. Aros, the company, helped during the elaboration of the land use plan. They financed an external expert, they financed technical advices and infrastructure, and all this was paid from the landowner to the city of Barranquilla. So the basic contents of the private master plan could be also found in the public plan, which obviously was made possible through this financial expert support by the private company. All this process was highly successful in economic terms. The land was valuated in the account books of Aros in 2008 with $400 million US dollar, in 2011 more than $800 million US dollar, which shows a little bit how the land was developed. What economic profit did Aros have from this development? I'm speaking now about the policy, about the plans, about the urban plans. Like I said, all the development which takes place is really like it was foreseen in the public plan. So we're not speaking about a chaotic development, which is not according to the urban planning law, but it is completely according to the urban planning law because it was made basically from the help of the private developers. There are some specific aspects, which are that there is a restriction on lots which are less than 5 hectares, which means that the projects are rather small. This also was a wish of the developer, who says that there's the law that if you make developments which are bigger than 5 hectares, you need a special plan, you need a more elaborated plan, you need more public participation. So the idea was to limit it on less than 5 hectares to avoid more public participation. One can also see in the plan that there are very few public roads designated in the land use plan, and there were some, let's say, strange decisions. If you speak with the planners who made this plan and ask them why this lot has to be built, even if it's in a green area, they say, okay, it was not my idea, it was the political will, and they wanted to implement it. So you have also these kind of developments. I'm going now to the conclusion, and I'm trying to conclude about the public actors, about the private actors, and something about the sub-urban distinctive features. The public actors, like I said, there was no steering approach, no facilitation, no hindrance during the suburbanization process. The public actors were just reacting and were basically doing that what the private actors wanted to do. There, in the law, exist these capacities to steer urban development, but it was just not used because there was an inexperience, it was a new law, and it was difficult to implement it. But of course, there were also the influence of private actors on politics and on public administration. Basically, it was a transfer of public planning competences to the private actor. The private capital, private actors gained higher profits through the urbanization. Basically, the landowner was gained a lot of money with this urbanization process. Real estate was seen as an investment and a business strategy, and not only from the big construction companies, but also from the people who live there, who see, okay, this is an area which is developing and I'm going to buy there to gain more money. It was basically local enterprises. Of course, aspects like money laundering playing also a role there. And like I said, private companies as landowners, planners, and builders of suburban projects. So well, we can speak about an authoritarian private governance there, keeping in mind that the division between private and public in Barranquilla isn't that easy, because the construction companies are really strongly related to the public sector. If we're speaking now about suburban governance, is there a suburban governance? What are the specific features of the area? It was a clear owner situation. No protests were there because the area was basically free of any kind of development. There's no civil society involved there. It was more inner circle governance, which was far more easier if there are not any kinds of developments already taken there. No neighborhoods which could be destroyed, nothing. And there was also the space to create this new Barranquilla, with not only suburban development, but also like infrastructure and shopping malls. The other conclusion, if we're speaking about Barranquilla as an example of Latin American suburbanization, we can see, okay, these new forms of suburbanization through private development, developers take place all over Latin America. And these are, of course, a result of neoliberal approaches, changes in the urban strategy, also in the national strategy. The forms, the physical appearance of these new developments are also quite similar everywhere, or gate, shopping centers, and, well, this strong private actors, big state actors, it's always, it's not only in Barranquilla like that. But there are also some distinctive features of Barranquilla. There is, with these new developments, it's no further fragmentation of the cityscapes, but it's just amplification of the development patterns which took place like this also in the years before, because all the new developments took place in neighborhoods or close to neighborhoods which are already rich neighborhoods. It's small-scale projects, which was due to the planning law and to avoid the special plans. And there is a really strong interrelation between private and public actors, political actors. So we can speak of a urban, suburban regime, which is very, very close and not very transparent. One key actor was of major importance, which was the landowner. And once again, it's not so much suburbanization, at least it's not perceived as suburbanization. It's more like building a new city which has no connection to the city core. People want to live there because they think, okay, this is the new city and I don't need the poor city. So this was basically it. Thank you very much. I'm happy to discuss. There was the new constitution in Colombia in 1991, and with this constitution it was the idea to make decentralization, to make the role of the regional level above the local level stronger. So this was basically the idea. It was not quite clear how to achieve this kind of this stronger role of the local level. So they decided to make these new plans, which was the first approach to steer urban development. Before that, it was hardly any kind of urban plan did exist, at least not for Barranquilla. And in these plans, in theory, there are a lot of participation methods, instruments, which should be used. But still, the first part of the development, the big shopping center which was built, also the university which is just already part of the suburban area, this was just there. So there was no discussion. So it was clear for everybody, okay, this is a development and we're going to develop this further on. So there was no discussion. It would have been possible, but the laws say, okay, well, we need to make consultation with civil actors and everything, but it just didn't took place because nobody was really against it, no? It was, or, yeah.
How did development here affect old Barranquilla? Did it pull investment money away from the existing city?
There was, like I said, all what's going to happen now, these are basically private companies. And there is, because of the situation of Barranquilla, not much free space. The other part of the city, there is the river and it can't be built. There are also other areas where there are developments, but still it's not that huge. They are not that huge areas. There is investment right now in the city center, but it's basically museums who are going to invest there. The big developers, they are basically in the north because there's the space. They have this master plan. They can basically do conforming their projects conforming to the master plan. So this is their favorite location to invest and to build.
I wondered if you could contrast the suburbanization process as it's occurring in the north with that. What's happening in the south in the poor neighborhoods? Mm-hmm. So how is suburbanization different in other parts of the city?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the southern part of the city, there is basically no big investors who are doing it. There are some projects, social housing projects, which are now going to be implemented. But it's basically private people who do this pirate urbanization. They search the lots and they are building in an informal way. Also, these areas are dangerous areas because there is a flood going on. They are not dangerous. How to say? They are difficult from a physical point of view. So people who live there face problems. Flood inundations going there, so it's a different kind of project. It's from the amount of houses, I think it's similar, or well, it's more in the southern part, but it's more dispersed. No? It's, and also there are not the public planning approach. There are ideas how to steer it, to make these social houses, big social houses projects, but until now it's not really part of the planning of the master plan, of the land use plan of Barranquilla. And also the people, there is different kind of people. People who live there in the developments I described are basically rich people, and the other one is more poor people.
Could you describe what transportation is like in Barranquilla? How transportation is different in the northern part and in the southern part of Barranquilla?
There is in the northern part very much is car-related transportation. There exists public transport with small buses. Recently, they invented a new system of public transport, the Transmetro system, Transmilenio system, which are bus lines, free bus lines, which connect the city center to some neighborhoods. This is also private investment, but it's more in the center and in the south of the city, because public transport is perceived as something for the poor, so people just don't use it, and until people from the north just don't use it. And until now, the traffic situation is not that bad that the people have to change it. There are traffic jams, but it's not like in other Latin American cities that these are really infecting people.
I have also a question about the comparison. I mean, I wonder to what extent Barranquilla can be compared to other Colombian cities and even cities in a larger region. In terms of, because, I mean, you basically say that there's just one owner. Is that sort of similar in other cities, or is there more conflict because there may be several owners or you know, different interests in terms of development? And what are the consequences, if in case there are differences for the governance framework?
There's Bogota, which is with 8 million people, a lot bigger than Barranquilla. There is more discussion about the developments. Also there, the investors came and built gated communities. This is a common feature, but it's more dispersed because also the city is bigger. There is not only one owner, there are different owners, so there is much more discussion about what's going on there. In other cities in the Caribbean coast, Barranquilla, Cartagena, and Santa Marta, we have the same developers, basically, who are investing there. But the land ownership is a little bit different. I think Barranquilla, because of this big land owner who had a clear idea, I want to urbanize this land, the process was more dynamic, it was more easily implemented than in other cities where there is much more discussion. Also here the area was basically, there were no neighborhoods which could be destroyed or which could be infected, which is not the case in other Colombian cities. So I think it just makes the process more clearer because we have only one actor and who could implement his ideas. Also the Bogota, there are many more actors. Here you have one actor and also only a few construction companies who are involved in the process, which is a little bit different in the bigger cities.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry we were late. We ended my class. I ended my class. So we all came together and so we missed the beginning. But our class, those of us who came late, this week and next week we're talking about infrastructure, urban infrastructure, suburban infrastructure in Montreal. And so we're asking all these conceptual questions. And one of the issues that we're talking about is that in the past, when infrastructures were put in cities, the idea was to create sort of a cohesive system of urban integration, which infrastructures were meant to integrate the city as a whole, but also to connect certain parts of the city, the workplaces and the residences and all that. And it was sort of an ideal that worked for many places around the world. It doesn't seem to be working that way anymore. And so I'm curious about to what degree the infrastructure systems in Barranquilla actually now are built to separate people rather than to connect people. Could you comment on that?
It was quite interesting because Barranquilla was the first city in Colombia who had a public infrastructure system during the 1930s as a result of the money which was there from the trade issues. The city had this public infrastructure until the end of the 1980s, at the beginning of the 1990s, and then there was a public-private company who is now responsible for the water infrastructure and everything like this. They are really involved in public planning, in urban planning. There is now the discussions about the new pot, about the new land use plan, and they are involved in the plan, and they say, okay, we are planning here some infrastructure investment, we are planning here some infrastructure, we are planning here some infrastructure. And what does the city? The city follows their plans. So it's not the idea that the city has some ideas about urban development, it's more that the infrastructure company has some ideas, some necessary. Probably it's necessary how to make the water supply, and the city follows this. So it's not worsening the situation, it's not this divide between rich and poor people, it's just that the city follows what the infrastructure company does. Also, well, like I said, public transportation doesn't play big role until now in Barranquilla. So this doesn't have a big influence on the urban development.
What influence does the urban have on housing quality, crowding, and affordability? What influences does development have on housing quality, or quantity, and affordability? Is it contributing positively to the housing stock and the affordability of housing, or is it neutral? Is it making a difference?
I mean, it's a huge amount of new apartments coming to the market. So it influences the higher prices market. People move out from other areas but they are living already in expensive apartments. So they have now problems to sell their old apartments because everybody wants to move in this new apartments. There is housing shortage in Barranquilla, but not in the high price sector. It's basically in the poor sectors, and these new developments don't have any influence on the situation of people who live in the southern part of the city. What might happen is that the old but still expensive apartments won't find anybody who will buy it. The prices of all these developments, it's extremely high. There is the banking system. All the developers try very close with the banks, so people try to buy it, even if they have to buy their to be in really really debt in a debt situation. But still, I think there is this two kinds of housing markets. One is the poor housing markets, and one is the rich housing market. And there's basically no connection. Like
so there's very little middle class.
There is. I mean, this is really high middle class projects. So really rich people have other kind of houses. So this is high middle class. But still, it's so much. I told the Estrato system. The first two social classes make up for almost 60% of the city, while the middle class, it's 10 to 15 per percent.
Question. Yeah, I just had a question. I was just wondering if you could expand on, like, you were talking about how local enterprises are ruled by, like, local families and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were talking about, like, how it's all about private development and how, and now, like you just said, that they're also connected to banks, right? And then you were also saying that most of, like, to, like, some degree, it was also influenced by, like, the drug traffickers and the amount of money that they had invested. So I just want to know, like, to what extent is the finances from the drug traffickers and the local communities, like, to what extent are they controlling, like, the infrastructure, like, the private developments, like, the banking system?
Mm-hmm.
So to what extent do these mafia-style families control the city and the banking system?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the key question, which nobody speaks about, no? really the point, because, well, you can see the development of Medellin and Cali during the times of the Cali cartel and of Pablo Escobar, where there was big construction boom going on. Now you see the same construction boom in Barranquilla, which is a harbor city basically in the northern part of Southern America. So of course this takes place. There is a lot of truck traffic. And there's a lot of money. You can see some construction projects which just stop. So you see ruins of construction projects in the city, and, well, people say, okay, it's not they didn't have any money. But this is one sign of the truck traffic that, well, people just didn't could build anymore because probably they are imprisoned now.
Oh.
So you can see it. There are some, well, there are scandals in the political realm which are now also infecting the former mayor of Barranquilla a little bit, but still it's not that clear. No, everybody knows it, but there is no police charge against them, which doesn't mean that it didn't exist, but until now there is no proof really to make it. Only the ruins. No? What is the case is that you speak with planners from the administration who don't have a political post. They say, okay, the politics made really influence on our way to make plans. We know what we can do and we know what we can't do. So we make the plans like this, so it won't hurt anybody of these key players. So this is certainly the case.
One last question. So, based on your opinion, right? Like, would you say these like drug traffickers, like, they own banks, like, within the city?
Mm.
Like, own their own banks?
I'm not. It's basically not so much local banks.
Okay.
These are big banks. Also, Banco Santander, which is a Spanish bank, which I wouldn't say if it's influenced by truck traffic. I don't know. So, but I'm not too sure if the bank system is really connected to this. What I was trying to say that the bank, of course, they see that people want to buy houses, so they make special plans for real estate. But I don't know to what degree there is a connection between truck traffic and the banks.
We have time for one more question. I think there is one here, or maybe two.
The question is there some kind of sort of social pressure for like middle class, upper class, to actually move around the city and move to new developments? I mean, the pressure in the way that sort of to maintain your social status within your group. Does that play a role, or is there more?
We ask the people who move in these areas, we ask them, well, if there are no financial restrictions, where did you move? And they say, okay, we would move out of the city where there's these country clubs, which are not new developments, which are rather old developments, but which is even more higher class. So these developments are seen as, well, it's still something classy, but it's affordable to us. So people say, okay, we are here because we have the money, but if we have more money, we would move out there. So the idea is basically, okay, we go there because it's nice, but if we would have more money, we admire the people who have more money to move out. Also, this idea of the new houses, it's quite important in these developments. People say, okay, this is a new house where everything is brand new, and this is kind of social, well, it's a status, no? You have a new house, not an old house, which is nice. Even though the quality of the house is not very, very high, you know? So I think people say, okay, we want to move out in 3 years, which I can imagine that in 3 years these developments will look quite differently. So this is a social pressure to move to the north, let's say, that, okay. People with money don't live in the southern part of the city. That's sure. And people who have more money, they live in new projects.
Which may be a fairly quick question. Who owns the infrastructure? So the privately installed water, sewer, roads. Hmm. Who owns and maintains it now?
This is the city. The private. This is the urbanizer, which was a private company. They built all the infrastructure. And then they hand it in to the city, and the city has also to maintain it. So the idea is that they make there is of course a regulation that the quality of the infrastructure should be fine before the city will take it. But it's basically the city who finally owns the infrastructure. But still, in these developments, there is hardly any public infrastructure. It's all inside of the gated communities, and there are not many roads which has to be maintained.
Well, thank you very, very much for your presentation, for a very interesting session. Thank you all of you for coming and joining us.
Thank you.
Working there as
they are.
When it comes to learning, small.